Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. This is going to be, assuming we have our guest here on the line before long, one of the most fascinating interviews you have ever heard, because this is one of the most fascinating books I've ever read, and it's going to be right up there in the top of six books in my library. The book starts out in the preface by saying this: economic hitmen are highly paid professionals who cheat countries around the globe out of trillions of dollars. They funnel money from the World Bank and the U.S. Agency for International Development and other foreign aid organizations into the coffers of huge corporations and the pockets of a few wealthy families who control the planet's natural resources. Their tools include fraudulent financial reports, rigged elections, payoff, extortions, sex, and murder. They play a game as old as empire, but one that has taken on new and terrifying dimensions during this time of globalization. I should know, I was an EHM, an economic hitman. And those words are written by John Perkins, our guest today. Mr. Perkins, thank you so very much for being with us. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Perkins.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think that, of course, you waited a long time to write the book, and I can understand why, because, of course, everything was done to keep you quiet. Why don't you give a little of the background of how you got into this business? You were actually recruited by the NSA and then went to work for an organization known as MAINE, a major international corporation dealing with energy that apparently was, I don't know, what was it, bought out, or did it just go under some years after you left?
Well, it was bought out sort of quietly disappeared. I think that was part of the plan, too. But, yeah, while I was still in business school in Boston in 1968, I was recruited by the National Security Agency, probably the nation's most secretive and largest spy organization. They, at their encouragement, I spent 3 years after that in the Peace Corps in South America, working with tribes who were opposed to oil companies and still are, so I kind of got on the job training. Then when I got out of the Peace Corps, I was brought into this consulting firm, Charles T. Maine in Boston, a very low-profile firm that was actually very powerful, but very few people have heard of us, so although we had eight floors in the Prudential Center in Boston, about 2,000 employees. And I was immediately trained by an amazing woman named Claudine, who's described in some detail in the book. She was very intelligent, very cunning, very seductive, and she knew all about me. During the National Security Agency interviewing process, they put me through lie detector tests, and they learned a great deal about weaknesses in my character. So Claudine's job was really to hook me, to bring me in using these weaknesses, to bring me in and also to tell me that all about the business I'd be expected to do, including the fact that it was a dirty business and that I would have to take an oath of secrecy and could never tell anybody about it, and therefore I should not go off on my first assignment to Indonesia unless I was completely ready to do this dirty job and never talk about it.
And I think really, as we begin to analyze your book, the whole idea was to come up with reports that would suggest that the various countries needed to borrow a lot of money, and once they borrowed money, they became indebted. And we'll talk more about that when we get back here in just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. John Perkins, who's written one of the most amazing books I've ever written. And those of you who listen to our program know I do an awful lot of book reading, but this book is a book which will be one of the six most important books in my library, because it's the story of his experience as an economic hitman working at the highest levels with our intelligence community, with our corporations, with the World Bank, with the international financiers. And their purpose was, of course, to get the lesser developed countries of the world, the underdeveloped countries, the poor countries of the world, to borrow a great deal of money. And by borrowing that money, and of course funneling a lot of that off into the hands of the very wealthy people there, the corrupt people, to indebt those countries so that today Indonesia puts out 25% of all the money they take in tax revenues just servicing their national debt. And other countries are putting out as much as 50% of their revenues to service their debt. And of course what we have done is use the other countries to enslave the people, and we're benefiting from it. Would that be a fair appraisal of what you found in your work, Mr. Perkins?
Yeah, that's a very good one, Stan. What we've done in the process is create the world's first truly global empire. And it's an empire that's been created largely without the military for the first time in history. It's been done primarily with economics. And in fact, there's no emperor or king. It's run by something I refer to as the corporatocracy, which is a group of men and a few women who run our major corporations and our government and big banking systems.
And of course, what they do, of course, they work secretly. And you point out that when you went in to the country, your whole purpose was to corrupt the people, to get them to accept the money. And it seemed like a pretty good idea at the time. But of course, if you failed and the country would not go along, you always pointed out there was something you called jackals waiting in the background. Now, would you like to talk a little bit about some of the things that happened if the country wouldn't go along with your suggestions?
Yeah, it was one of the great motivating aspects of my job, knowing that these jackals were always lurking in the background. These are CIA-sanctioned assassins, and first they may try to overthrow a government, but if they are unsuccessful at that, then they'll assassinate the leader. So that economic hitmen don't usually fail, but I, in fact, failed miserably in Ecuador with President Jaime Roldos and in Panama with Omar Torrijos, and I knew because these men would not come around to our system.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. John Perkins, who worked for 10 years from about 1971 to 1981 as an economic hitman working for a major corporation. But I'm going to let him tell the story really of what happened. And we were just talking about the fact that there really were people that were backing him up. And if he failed to bring the leaders of countries into line with the corporatocracy, which is the group he refers to, combination of corporations, international finance, and government. Then, of course, there were the jackals. And would you just tell that story again? Because actually, we now have some of the other stations back with us.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Stan. Yeah, basically, what we would do is identify third world countries that had resources that we covet, or our corporations covet, like oil is one of them, and one of many. And we'd arrange loans for that would be given primarily by the World Bank and its affiliates to this third world country, but the majority of that loan would never leave the United States. It would go to hire U.S. firms, like the ones we hear a lot about these days, Halliburton, Bechtel, those types of firms, to build big projects in the third world country, projects that would primarily serve only the rich people, huge power plants, ports, industrial parks, that sort of thing. And they would leave the country with a tremendous debt that it could never repay. And so at some point in time, we go back to the country and say, listen, you can't pay your debt, therefore you owe us a lot of money, but you can't pay it, provide us with a service and sell our oil companies your oil at a real cheap price, or provide land for military bases, vote with us on the next critical UN vote, that sort of thing. And as I was saying, that when we failed, which isn't very often, but when we did fail, as I failed in Panama with Omar Torrijos and in Ecuador with Jaime Roldos, the next line of defense was the CIA-sanctioned jackals who would come in and try to overthrow the government or assassinate the president, and which is what they did to Jaime Roldos and Omar Torrijos. They were both assassinated because they didn't buy into the system. They were very integrous people who wanted to help the poor people of their country and weren't interested in lining their own pockets in the process, and they paid with their lives for this.
And I think it's the American people have to understand that we've lived a very wonderful life here in this country, but it has been at the expense of the people who've been impoverished throughout the world. Would that be a fair statement?
It certainly is. We've created this empire, and it's really the world has a new form of slavery in it. People who are working for us all around the world at below standard, below living standard wages. They can't really survive on these wages, and we're fostering that system.
And, of course, over in China, they're making maybe $50, $75 a month. That's all they can make there. And, of course, we live very well. We get the products we can buy. You can buy a cell phone. In fact, they'll even give you a cell phone for nothing with pictures on it. Or you can buy your products here so cheaply. But that's because these countries are so deeply indebted to us, they have to go along. Would that be a fair statement?
That's true, Stan, but we also have to realize that we're paying a horrendous price for this. It's U.S. taxpayer dollars, and yet most Americans don't realize this is happening. Most Americans believe that foreign aid is used altruistically, when in fact a great deal of it is not used altruistically at all. It's used simply to make the owners of some of our big businesses a lot wealthier and a few families in these developing countries. And as a result of this system, we've created a tremendous amount of resentment, indeed hatred, around the world. And it's coming back to haunt us now. And it's creating a very unstable world for our children and grandchildren. I have a 22-year-old daughter, and I'm very concerned at the world that I've created that I'm leaving for her. I intend to spend the rest of my life trying to make it a better world.
And, of course, the thing was that you were really sort of an idealist. You knew what you were doing was wrong, but after all, there were all the motivations there, the salary, the excitement, the power. But, of course, you in many respects, identified with the president of Panama, the president of Ecuador, who were trying to do what was right. And, of course, for that reason, you didn't bring the pressure upon them that you might have. And as a result, then, of course, the CIA came in and simply eliminated them. Would that be a fair statement?
It certainly would be, yeah. And I have to say that what we economic hitmen do is not illegal. For the most part, I didn't do anything illegal. The system I described about imposing these debt burdens on other countries would be illegal if you were to do it on an individual basis. If a banker were to come to you and coerce or seduce you into accepting a loan he knew you couldn't repay because he wanted to get some benefit from you later on, that would be criminal. And you could get out from under it and he'd be arrested. That's not true on the international field. It should be, but it isn't. So for the most part, the things that I did were not illegal. In fact, they're things that are taught for us to do in business schools. I was patted on the back by people like Robert McNamara, president of the World Bank. My official title was chief economist at a major consulting firm. I had several dozen people working for me. So it was easy for me to justify what I was doing on one level. On another level, in my heart, I knew it was wrong. I was brought up with some very strong standards. I was raised a Calvinist, and after 300 years of Yankee Calvinists in New Hampshire and Vermont. And I knew in my heart that it was wrong, and yet it was easy for me to look the other way and justify what I was doing.
So eventually, of course, you got out of the business in 1981, and then, of course, you were going to write the book. And then what happened? Why didn't you write the book in 1981 or 1991?
Yeah, well, I got out of the business in 81, partly because I'd been made the youngest partner in the firm's 100-year history, and I was about to get quite rich if I stayed in, and I knew if that happened, I would probably be hooked. And so I got out when I did, partly for that reason. I was, of course, first of all, sworn to secrecy, and second of all, I received bribes and threats every time I started to write the book, including as late as in 1990 a very, very significant payoff by one of these large corporations, essentially not to write the book. And I succumbed to those bribes and threats. And incidentally, I used the money from that, those bribes to form a nonprofit organization, Dream Change. You can go to dreamchange.org and find out more about us. We work with a lot of indigenous people in these countries that I had ripped off. So I could, again, sort of justify not writing the book. I was putting the money to good work for the people that I caused to suffer.
But, of course, it was after the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, and then the realization we were going to war with Iraq, and you, of course, recognize we weren't going to war with Iraq because they had weapons of mass destruction, or because why they were working with Al-Qaeda, or any of the reasons that were given to the American people. You saw the much bigger picture of that. Do you want to just talk about your impression of why we're really over in Iraq, as time and time again we've intervened throughout the world, telling the American people one reason, but with entirely different purposes behind it, and of course to benefit the great international corporations, the Halliburtons, the Bechtels, the Fluor, all of these international corporations, which of course tie into this corporatocracy. What is your take on why we're really in Iraq?
Well, it's very clear to me. We cut an amazing deal in Saudi Arabia in the 70s during the oil crisis there with the House of Saud, and I was a major part of cutting that deal. And in that deal, the House of Saud agreed to send most of the money that they earned selling oil back to the United States, invested in U.S. government securities. The interest from the securities would be used by the U.S. Treasury Department to hire U.S. companies to build up Saudi Arabia in a Western image. Desalinization plants, power plants, indeed entire cities out of the desert. And the Royal House, the House of Saud, would agree to keep oil within reasonable boundaries for us, and we would agree to keep them in power. That deal has held since 1974, 75, until today it's still holding. So it seemed like a very good deal, and we figured that we'd do the same thing with Saddam Hussein. He didn't buy it. I'm not sure why, but he didn't buy it. So we sent in the jackals in the 80s, and they were unsuccessful. He had very good bodyguards. He had doubles. They couldn't get through to him. So we sent in the military, and that's the last resort in building this empire. First, it's the economic hitmen. If we fail, it's the jackals. If they fail, and only if they fail, is this empire built on military.
And, of course, your point was that if Saddam Hussein had simply gone along with the system, why, he'd still be in power today.
I have no doubt about it. If he'd done what the House of Saud did, and the Shah of Iran before him, and many others, we'd have protected him as much as we could. We would have sold him all the tanks and fighter planes he wanted, and probably built him chemical plants, too. We tried to convince him again in the 90s. We figured after the first war he was sufficiently chastised that he'd come around, but he didn't. And the jackals failed once again. So again, we went to war with him.
And of course, you point out, he really is an evil and wicked man, and much of what he does is very reminiscent of Hitler. But as you pointed out, we don't really seem to worry about that too much. We backed a lot of people that were very much like Hitler.
I'm ashamed to admit, as an American, that is our stance. This is not about democracy. At the same time that we were saying we were attacking Iraq to promote democracy, we were also covertly trying to get rid of a democratically elected president in Venezuela because he was trying to make it tough on our oil companies. We've thrown out many democratically elected presidents in many places around the world, and we've supported some terrible dictatorships. It depends on whether they help our corporations or don't.
And of course, you talk about Mossadegh, the democratically elected prime minister of Iran, who, of course, was deposed by the CIA so we could bring in the Shah, who would go along with our agenda. Was that a fair statement?
That's one of them. There have been many, you know.
Well, we want to talk about a lot of those when we get back here, because you live this. You saw it. You love America, as I do. But you realize, of course, America will not survive as a free society if it turns its back on morality and imposes its will on people who do not want to change their way of life. And as you pointed out so well, necessarily bringing in big roads and big dams to people who don't want this change their way of life is not necessarily progress at all. We'll be back here in just a moment with John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Our four tapes set on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and first our guest this afternoon is John Perkins. His book is Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and we're going to carry this book because I think it's a very, very important book, and it has a message in it. Very, very few people who have been part of the inner circle of the people who are really manipulating and running the things behind the scenes, or running the world behind the scenes, have ever come forward and had the audacity to write a book about it. And I believe Mr. Perkins is endangering his life by doing what he's done, but I think he felt he had to get this information out so the American people can see things and see it very clearly. And so many of the things that are going on in the world. Why is it, for instance, that over in Indonesia today, why we find out that Indonesia was spending 25% of all the money it took in just to pay interest on the money it owned. And, oh, we very benevolently have said, oh, well, you don't have to pay your debts for a little while. Now, you actually go into the background of what happened in Indonesia and how we placed a corrupt regime in power. Would you like to give a little of the background of the history? Because your book really covers so much fascinating history from an insider's point of view. Since you'd worked in Indonesia, you studied that history.
Yeah, Indonesia was my first assignment in 1971 as an economic hitman. It was a key country. At that point, we basically knew that we were going to lose the war in Vietnam, at least the people at the top of our system did. And there was a domino effect that if we lost Vietnam, then the other Southeast Asian countries would go one domino after another. And Indonesia was looked at the key to preventing that from happening. In addition, Indonesia had a great deal of oil, and it has the largest Muslim population of any country in the world. So we went to Indonesia and set up this loan for Indonesia to borrow money and build a huge power system. Now, most of the electricity that would be built out of this would all be built by U.S. companies, and most of the electricity would go to big industries, to the very, very wealthy people. The poor people in the slums and the rural areas wouldn't get any of this. So Indonesia is left holding a huge debt that's only served the wealthy people. You mentioned that 25% debt service. That means that money is not available to help the poor become better educated, to give them housing, to give them medical care and other social services. And yet they didn't benefit at all from those types of loans.
And of course, in your book, you point out the dramatic changes that have occurred, you know, since 1960. You know, the living standards of the poor has not risen, but it has actually fallen. Do you have those figures right at your fingertips? No, I don't have them. I can't find them.
Yeah, I think the ones you're referring to is that in the 1960s, the income ratio of the one-fifth of the world's people living in the wealthiest countries to the one-fifth living in the poorest countries was 30 to 1. Today it's like 75 to 1. So the gap between wealthy and poor, the ratio has gone from 30 to 1, which is bad enough, but to 75 to 1, which is much worse. And this during decades when the World Bank and the United Nations have bragged about the fact that we've been helping the poor get better off. The truth is exactly the opposite. Another startling figure, Stan, is that 24,000 people die every single day from lack of decent nourishment, and 30,000 children die every day from incurable diseases because they don't have medicine. That means over 50,000 people are dying every day needlessly, and I hate to say, not only are we not doing anything to stop that, we're in fact, our corporations are doing a lot of things to foment that. So, you know, we've had a terrible disaster in Southeast Asia, some tsunamis that killed upwards of 200,000 people. 9/11, 3,000 people died tragically. Those are terrible situations. But the fact is, every single day, over 50,000 people die around the world needlessly. We ought to put an end to that. It's not pretty. It doesn't make for good television. There's no huge waves sweeping in or planes hitting buildings, but it happens every single day. And we can end that, and I think the American people want to end that. That's why I wrote the book. Once I think we fully understand what's going on in this world and our part in it, we'll demand change.
Well, I certainly hope that you're right, and I'll do everything I can to get your message out, because it's a powerful message from somebody who is on the inside of this whole incredible scam. And have you noticed, of course, who it is who's doing all the buildings over there in Iraq? Is it the Iraqi corporations? Is it European corporations? No, it's Bechtel, Halliburton, the same old people that John Perkins writes about in his book. I'm sure that must have struck you as you saw what's going on over there. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. And we want you, of course, to get the information. We hope that you'll actually study the book, go through it, understand this is exactly what happens. It's a standard pattern. It's been used over and over and over again. We'll be right back here with Mr. Perkins in just a moment.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is John Perkins. His book is Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Did you have any difficulty getting the book published? Or, you know, I would think it would be rather controversial for many of the establishment publishers.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest publishing companies in the world. The president of that company invited me to dinner in New York. I flew up, had dinner with him. He'd read the manuscript, and he said, "This is a great book. It's a story that needs to be told. It's rivetingly written, but I can't publish it because I'm owned by a big international company, and I might lose my job because that company might get into trouble." This happened. My literary agent sent it out to the 20 largest publishing companies in the United States, and every one of them refused it. For most of them, we get similar types of responses, that they liked the book, but they weren't ready to publish it for some reason that they trumped up. And then a very courageous family, oh, not a big international corporation, but great publishing company, Barrett Kohler in San Francisco, published it. Interestingly now, it's ironic that the book has gone into its seventh printing. It's only been out since the early November. It's on the New York Times bestseller list this week. And now that some of those big companies, including the one with the president inviting me out to dinner, are trying to buy the rights for it in paperback. You know, once they discover it can make a lot of money for them, they're willing to go out on a limb, I guess.
Well, anyway, I congratulate the people who did have the courage to publish this book, because it's a very powerful, a very revealing book, and it goes into the background of how the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and USAID, the Agency for International Development, and the Asian banks, and all of these international organizations. We think they're so altruistic, and they're really there to help the little guy. Would you like to sort of comment on that misconception, the way the American people have been bamboozled into believing that what we do in the way of foreign aid is really to help the poor?
Yeah, that's the big shame of the whole thing, Stan. I think that the American people really have been bamboozled. These organizations are being used, unfortunately, by big corporations to just make their own owners much richer. People around the world understand this. The people in these third world countries, they know that the billions of dollars are being lent to their countries. They can read this in the newspapers. They talk about it, and they see that the money just goes to big U.S. corporations and a few of their own families, and they don't get any better off for it. So they're angry. And that's why there's so much resentment about us these days. And unfortunately, most Americans don't understand this. They think this aid really is altruistic. We're in the dark. I often hear people say things like, well, geez, we give these people all this money, and yet they still don't like us. What's wrong with us? Let's not give them any more money. The fact is, we ought to be doing foreign aid, but we ought to be doing it in a way that really helps the poorest of the poor to build up systems, agriculture, etc., so they can feed themselves and take care of themselves. That's not happening. The American people, including many of the people who work for the Halliburtons and Bechtels and the World Bank, don't understand this. It's so easy to stick our heads in the sand and ignore what's going on. Meanwhile, we live very, very comfortably here.
And I think that's one reason why we want to put our head in the sand. After all, if we had to face the horrible reality that you've had to face, the realization of what we're doing to people all throughout the world, why then people would have to, of course, become involved as you have. But it really took more of the crisis situation of 9/11 to finally, after almost 20 years, to finally decide you had to write this book.
That's right. It was 9/11. I went up to Ground Zero shortly afterwards, and as I stood there looking into that terrible pit, smelling the burning flesh, I knew I had to write the book, because I knew that this was just a reflection of a world that we've created. It's a very unsafe, very angry world, a world I don't want to turn over to my 22-year-old daughter. I want to turn over something better for her. So I knew I had to break this oath of secrecy I had taken, because we're lying to the American people. This is a democracy. The American people have a right to know where their tax money is going, what their corporations are doing, what their government is doing, and so I knew I had to tell this story. Because I know that once the American people really understand what's going on, we'll demand change. And when we demand change, we ultimately will get it.
Well, that's why I want to do everything I can to get your message out. Well, is it all right if we take a couple of callers?
Of course.
Let's go to Robert, who's calling from Illinois. Hi, Robert. Did you have a question for Mr. Perkins?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I wanted to ask Mr. Perkins if he thought this would relate to the free trade area of the Americas and, like, the WTO and all that.
Oh, thank you, Robert. Yes, those are all part of this system that corporatocracy has built up. Over the last 50 years, we've managed to create incredible organizations and write incredible laws that help the corporatocracy. The free trade agreement, as it's called, which is a misnomer, and the World Trade Organization, which is another misnomer, are really very restrictive, and they make it much easier for the big corporations to thrive and leave a lot less room for the little guys and the people who live in the third world.
Sort of the idea of maybe one day the corporations will rule the world, and our votes really won't matter very much.
No, the corporations do rule the world, in fact, at this point.
You're absolutely right. Anything else, Robert?
I was wondering, as far as the World Bank and the IMF are concerned, are the Europeans doing the same thing as the United States is doing in this regard?
To a certain degree they are, but on a much smaller level. You might say that we're the quarterback, or we're the CEO. There are other players on this team, but we're the leaders by far. You know, of the 100 largest economies in the world, 52 are corporations, not countries, they're corporations, and 47 are U.S. corporations. So we're definitely the leader in this, although we're not in it completely alone.
If Walmart were a country, it would be the 19th largest economy in the entire world. That's a frightening figure.
Isn't that amazing?
Okay, thank you so much, Robert. Let's go to Carlos, who's calling from Carlsbad. Hi, Carlos. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon. Mr. Perkins, I read your book, bought your book, and I've read it. And obviously, there must be a lot of government leaders across the world who are being bribed to accept IMF and World Bank loans, right?
That's right. Yes, the system works because these leaders of these countries accept this situation because they make a lot of money off of it. Not only are they bribed in kind of overt bribery ways, which is, can be done legally, incidentally. I could explain that if we have enough time. But in addition to that, the projects that are built in their countries really serve them, the very wealthy people. So they benefit from the power plants and the ports and the industrial parks, but most of the people in the country do not benefit from them. So these people are very much a part of the system, and there's a number of countries right now, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, and a number of other Latin American countries that are in fact saying, look, we don't owe this money. We didn't. The people of this country didn't accept these loans. It was a few government officials who were corrupt and were basically puppets of the U.S. anyway who accepted these loans. We shouldn't have to pay them back. They're not our loans. The banks never should have made them to these other people.
And, you know, of course, if countries start doing that sort of thing, as Argentina has done, why, of course, this whole system could begin to come unraveled. And, of course, everybody's horrified at that. Actually, I think it could be the greatest thing in the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we do know, Stan, is that empires never survive. They always collapse. And this one, I think, is showing a lot of cracks right now, and that's one of them, that the countries like Argentina and Brazil and other countries are standing up to this and saying, we're not going to repay those loans. And there's a number of other places where the system seems to be cracking. We know that empires never survive for very long. They collapse. The challenge here is to turn this empire into something magnanimous, something compassionate, and to really follow the dream of our founding fathers of creating a world of peace and prosperity for all people.
And I could tell that how deeply you felt reading your book, that you really feel the American ideal is a wonderful thing. It's just a shame that the American people have lost sight of that vision. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, there really was a great deal of intrigue in what you were doing, because the average individual had no idea. I mean, the average person in the countries had no idea. But you mentioned that lots of times what was done in the way of bribing people was really quite legal. Now, of course, we have all sorts of laws against bribery, but there are ways of getting around that, aren't there?
Well, certainly. And most of these big companies do not break the law. They bend over backwards not to. But I'll tell you a good example. Right, recently, there's been a lot of talk about companies like Halliburton in Iraq paying $1 million for fuel for their trucks that's only worth $600,000. That's how it's happened. If you're a government official, Stan, and I want to bribe you, I go to your brother or business partner who owns the John Deere franchise, let's say, and I make an arrangement to rent $600,000 worth of equipment from you, and I'll pay you $1 million. And we know full well that you're going to give most of that other $400,000 to. I'm paying your brother this, or your partner. We know full well that he's going to give the money to you, and so that's how you get your $400,000. You know, I pay $1 million for goods and services worth $600,000, and the rest is basically a bribe. But it's not illegal. If I get caught, and I probably won't, but if I get caught, I simply say, oh, my God, you mean I struck a bad deal? I thought I was paying the right price.
It wasn't that Halliburton that did that, paying, I don't know, a couple of dollars a gallon for gasoline that should have cost 50 cents.
Well, then, and that's how it's done. You know, it's not somebody in Halliburton lining his own pockets, but it's part of this policy. Another way that bribes are done, we did this a lot in our own company, is you arrange for the children of high people in the government to come to the United States and go to college here, and you pay their full tuition, you pay all their expenses, and you hire them as interns in your company and pay them a good salary. So in essence, you're not doing anything illegal. It sounds even nice. You're providing jobs and education from somebody from Indonesia or Iran or someplace. But the fact of the matter is, you're directly putting $50,000 or $100,000 a year in the pocket of their father, or in essence, that's what you're doing.
Well, let's go to Carlos. He got disconnected. We didn't mean to cut you off there, Carlos. Go ahead.
Yes, another question, Mr. Perkins. Now, isn't the IMF and the World Bank setting a very dangerous trend by allowing all these international corporations like Vivendi, Suez, Thames Water to come in and buy up the water from all these Latin and African countries, and then raising the rates on them? Many people of the indigenous people cannot afford the new rates. A lot of them are having to drink polluted waters and dying. But of course, also, ultimately, if you allow these corporations to start taking over the resources of this country, especially water, isn't there a potential danger that once they buy up the water of the world, which is the most important mineral that we have, can't they hold the world hostage and set up any form of government that they want?
Okay, let's get the... What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Perkins?
Well, yeah, it's a very important point. This whole idea of privatization is playing right in the hands of the corporatocracy. Why should we be led to believe that the executives of a private corporation whose legal duty is to enhance the value of stock and help their stockholders, why should we believe that they're going to serve the public better than local civil servants whose sworn duty is to protect the public? I mean, it's ridiculous. Civil servants may not always be so efficient. They may even be corrupt, but there's ways to protect against that. What we do know is that when you turn these systems over to a corporation, the duty of that corporation is to serve its stockholders, not the local population. And yet, we've launched this tremendous crusade around the world of privatization. It is a usurping of the resources. It's exactly the type of thing that I've been describing.
Okay, so, Carlos, we got to go. We got a whole board full of other people, but your points are well made.
Great book. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And let's go to Kent calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kent.
Hello.
Hello, Kent. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering how I can identify specific countries relative to their involvement in this. I have a copy of the National Data Book and the Statesman's Yearbook, and I just wondered if there's any tables in there that would be relative to this.
Yeah. Yes, you look at any country that has some resource that we covet. Oil is a good example, but there's lots of others, and some places like Haiti, it's cheap labor. But any country that has resources that we covet, I guarantee you there's economic hitmen there, and I was probably there, or one of the members of my staff was there, because that's where we go.
Uh-huh.
And so basically, it's a book is well worthwhile reading. You can almost, look at the globe and point to any country, and you're going to find this influence there.
Do you have any specific information on India?
Well, yeah. I mean, India has some resources that we covet. India is almost an exception in many ways to this rule. It gained its independence from England. And it's had some fairly enlightened leadership and some fairly enlightened economic policies as far as fending off this kind of corporatocracy thing is concerned. So in a way, it's an exception, and yet part of the reason it's an exception is because it had such a strong connection to the British Empire.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, fine. Now let's go to Dale, who's calling from Soquel. Dale, did you have a question?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Is with the credit markets and all the screws that are being tightened on people's wallets these days, it seems like everywhere you go, there's just these incredible offers, even on the consumer level, let alone the mortgage refinancing market. There's these incredible offers for people to essentially sell out the next year or 18 months on credit. And I was wondering, how do you see that influence in affecting the economy in the near future, as far as everything's cracking? And I'll take your answer on the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And first, the question is, what about this effort to get everybody in debt in the United States? Are we going to end up like the third world countries ourselves?
Well, it's not my area of expertise. We're really talking microeconomics here, and I'm a macroeconomist. So it's hard, I'd just be speculating. I probably couldn't be any more insightful than anybody else.
Well, I would simply suggest to our listeners is get out of debt. Do not get into debt. Because just as countries can't get into debt individually, individuals can't either. And you get, I just got something today, you know, 1% interest, borrow on your house up to the hilt.
Oh.
Don't do it.
Well, absolutely, Stan. That's the real sum. And I was lucky to be raised a New England Calvinist from that standpoint, because my parents always brought me up not to have debt. I have two credit cards, and I make sure that I pay them the day the bill comes in, because I don't want that 17 or 18% interest.
Well, we've got about 40 seconds. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
I want to leave the listeners with tremendous hope, and the book does that. It's not a pessimistic book at all. I think we're on the verge of turning this thing around. The American people are compassionate, wonderful people. We believe in the principles of the Founding Fathers, and we're in a point in history where we can really turn this thing around. Spread the word. Help everybody become informed to understand what's going on in the world and to demand change.
Well, God bless you. Thank you, and we'll be having you on our other programs later. But thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure, Stan. Keep up your great work.
And well, bye-bye.
Bye.
A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I want to mention that, of course, we do carry the book, John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We think it's a very, very important book, and we hope to have four interviews with Mr. Perkins and be able to put together a four-tape set. This information helps to explain so many of the things that you read. I read my book by Professor Stiglitz, who got the Nobel Prize in Economics back in 2001, and he pointed out that even though he was the vice president of the World Bank, that all of the policies that were being carried out by the IMF, and later on he wrote a book about his time at the IMF, everything they did made matters worse. How could you do that? He didn't understand how, with all these smart people working for the World Bank and USAID and, of course, the International Monetary Fund, we could be impoverishing the people of the rest of the world and destroying their health and destroying the economy of these nations and enriching the rich and impoverishing the poor. And, of course, when you read The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, it's all very obvious. That's the way it was planned. So we hope many of you want to get the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And then, of course, you really need to understand that there is an establishment that runs the world, and that's the story of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. If you're going to have one book, of course, it will give you the whole story. Now, remember, this is 1,342 pages. This is a textbook. This is not something you sit down just and read over in an evening. But Professor Quigley takes you into the fact that there really is a secret society. It controlled England. It controls America. It dominates what's going on. Its goal is a new world order, and it is run by people of great wealth who believe that they have the right as aristocrats to rule the world. And basically, this is the whole theme behind everything going on today. Tragedy and Hope, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, two books you need to get. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I was just telling our people locally here that we will be carrying John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and we think it's a very important book. You'll want to have it, you'll want to read it, you'll want to tell others about it, and we hope to be putting together a four-tape series with Mr. Perkins to give you the facts of what we're talking about. He has risked his life, his family's life. If you don't think these people would kill him and others, you know, if the opportunity came up, you really don't understand how this system works. He talks about how the CIA kills government leaders, creates revolutions, and it's all done, of course, with the full support of the establishment which controls our intelligence agencies. And that, of course, gets into the story that Professor Quigley tells about the group that really rules America, controls both of our political parties, makes mockery out of this whole concept of elections. And if you have his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time by Professor Quigley, read pages 1247 and 1248. You can understand the last election where Professor Quigley says we need two political parties so that people can feel that they can throw the rascals out every 4 years, but the foreign and domestic policies will not change. It's all a charade, ladies and gentlemen, and will persist in being a charade until you care enough to get involved and help us to get the truth out. You need our 4-tape set on the secret government. You need our 4-tape set on the secret societies. You need our secret government special. It will give you the information that you need to reach others, to help them understand what's going on. And behind everything are the spirits of forces. You need my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special, because certainly we go into how this all ties together. And it is not simply the bankers, or it is not simply the Masons, or it's not simply the Council on Foreign Relations, or not simply the Club of Rome. You need to see how they all interlock, the ultimate goal, the ultimate objective, and where America, where the world is headed, if the good people are not willing to take a stand. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of either our November or December newsletter, both deal with the fluoride issue, and of course we'll send you one of them if you would like. Of course, we hope you'll want to subscribe to our newsletter. Now, you can, of course, go up on the Internet and get these newsletters. They're available at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We give you our permission to pull them down. We give you our permission to copy them. We give you our permission to help us get the truth out across America. Our January newsletter is actually almost a book review of John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That'll be a couple of weeks from now. We'll have that available for you. But we want you, of course, to take that book and to duplicate it, and pardon me, to take the newsletter, duplicate it, and hopefully then people will want to get Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Remember, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, on the bestseller list, a very important book that 20 publishers turned down because they were afraid to publish it. Why? Because it tells you the truth, and you're not supposed to get the truth. You're certainly not going to get it from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or Dan Rather. Of course, Dan won't be there much longer, but you have to understand that the media is controlled. You want to verify it? The book? The New Media Elite by Professor Ben Bagdakian, former chairman of the Department of Journalism at the University of California. The New Media Elite, available from Radio Liberty, as are all the other things we talk about. If you haven't seen the videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, you need to get them either on video or DVD. They're very professionally done. And then the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. An awful lot of people have seen them. They've all been impressed, and we recommend them strongly for you or your grandchildren. If you love your grandchildren or your children, get them to read this book. Get them to see this video, because they'll understand the satanic nature of the music that they're listening to, the music that's coming to our churches. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.